imagine all the people, Larry.
I'm trying to imagine them, but then again, I don't have much of an imagination.
Imagine all the people, Larry.
I'm doing my best, Dan. Doing my best.
Imagine all the people. John Lennon. Today would have been his 71st birthday.
Wow, 71. He would have been an old fart.
He would have been an old fart, but he would have been the coolest old fart around. John Lennon. Good song. Talented man. 31 years ago. Do you remember where you were, Larry?
I believe I do. I was in the cafeteria of Fort Lee High School, I believe. But the reason why I believe this is because I remember a girl coming in weeping, sobbing, saying, John Lennon is dead. John Lennon's been killed. And I can't imagine that's the first I heard it, because as you had pointed out previously, that he actually was killed the night before, right?
Right. He was it was December 8th, and so, it was late at night. I think it was around, it was probably around 9 or 9.30. And I remember the announcement was made on Monday Night Football late into the game by, I believe it was Howard Cosell made the announcement. And that was the first announcement that the world heard that, that John Lennon had been assassinated. I still am a big Beatles fan, and all the my English papers when I was in high school, junior high school, because you're much older than me, Larry. I was a couple years behind you. All my papers were on the Beatles and John Lennon. I was a particularly big John Lennon fan. So I was actually writing a report on the Beatles when the announcement was made.
Synchronicity.
There you go. So John Lennon, if you're listening, thanks for the great music, sir. And here we are. My name is Dan Sturgis.
Yes, it is. And my name is Larry Hewitt.
Larry Hewitt is a friend of mine, and we are at the SciShow Studios. Where are we, Larry? I'm not even going to
go ahead and say it. Go ahead and say it.
We're on the Lower East Side.
We're
in the East Village.
Yes.
We're at Larry's place.
For crying out loud.
And we're here with Priscilla. What's your?
Paulina
the
Koshkarina
cat.
Koshkarina Koshkarova.
She is our co-host this evening. She's laying on the table enjoying a...
Flicking
her tail at the microphone, trying to duff my beer, which I wouldn't appreciate, Paulina.
Did you say duff your beer?
Duff your beer. You never use that phrase?
What does that mean exactly?
It's when you spill a beer. It's called duffing your beer.
Duffing your beer.
Don't duff the beer, man.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, anyway, we're both a little pooped tonight, Larry. What'd you do last night?
Yeah, a little poop. A little poop, in fact.
A little pooped.
We did your lovely investigation last night.
We did a lovely
at Merchant House.
We did a delicious
after your delicious lecture.
Yes, I did a lecture at the Merchant's House last night, and we had a great group of people down there, and I did announce the show at the lecture, so hopefully some of those people might be listening. If they are, thanks for coming down. You guys were a great great audience. You had some really interesting questions. We had a great Q&A at the end of it, and it did a lot of good for the Merchant's House. I think we raised $920 through this lecture, and all that money goes to the upkeep of the museum.
Nothing to sneeze at.
No, and it's the Merchant's House is a great place, and they could certainly use the money. They're going through a big renovation right now, and every penny helps down there. It's almost like a mom and pop shop down there. Although it is an accredited museum and they do get funding from the city, the funding doesn't go far. And especially when dealing with an historic home, any kind of renovations or work, it's you just double and triple the price when you get something like that done. So
which is what I do, as a matter of fact. I double or triple my price.
When you're doing a historic home renovation.
Well, you know, for any sort of special work someone asks me to do.
All right, so anybody out there who's looking to have any kind of work done, if it's special, don't ask Larry, because he's going to double or triple the price on you. But,
I don't even know what that means.
No, but he'll do it, because that's the kind of guy Larry is.
It is.
Now, Larry's a great guy, and this is our second show, Larry?
I'm confused now.
Yeah, so am I. So am I.
I don't know, is it the first part of the second show?
Is it
the third show?
No. The third show we have to do again, which will actually make that like the fourth show. and this is the second part of the second show.
I don't even know who I am anymore.
This is the second part of the first part of the second show.
It's the first part of the second show.
but it's the second time we're doing it, so it's the second...
It's the second time we're doing the first part of the second show.
Right.
That's it.
All right. And I think it's going great.
Oh, it's it's a dream.
It is a little slice of heaven. And but here we are. Tonight's topic is going to be consciousness. But before we get into that, just a couple of quick things. We do have a big show coming up on October 31st on Halloween night. We're going to move out of the SciShow Studios here.
Indeed.
On the Lower East Side, and or the East Village, and we're going to move all the way about four blocks away, and we're going to go to the Merchant's House itself, and we're going to do a broadcast live from 8 to 10 from the Merchant's House, and we'll have some guests there. We'll have Kathy Toll, who's a psychic medium. She'll be there. Maybe, Larry, if you can get a hold of the woman.
I'm trying. Catherine Oleskis, I'm calling you out.
Yeah, it might be. Well, now she knows where she's going to go, so that's too bad. But we'll have some mediums there. Maybe do.
She's going to know where she's going
if she's listening to this.
Why shouldn't she know where she's going, though?
It would be great to have her not know where she's going and have her just show, you know, tell her, meet her on the corner and bring her there so she doesn't know any history of the house.
Well, she's not listening.
How do you know, man? We probably have thousands of listeners right now.
I don't think she's one of them.
Okay.
I'll tell her not to listen.
All right. So, but we'll have some people. We'll have some people that have had experiences at the Merchant's House. They'll be there, and we'll have lots and lots of fun. Larry's going to wear his, what was the outfit you were going to wear?
G-string and pasties.
G-string and pasties. I'm going to dress as a Hooters girl. That's kind of my default Halloween costume. So that'll be October 31st. From 8 to 10 p.m. We'll interview also Anthony Belov, who's a board member at the Merchant's House. They do have lots of things going on the week before Halloween. There's a lot of ghost tours and a lot of activity there. You can also win a raffle to come on an investigation at the Merchant's House with myself and Larry. Larry, you'll be on that investigation as well, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there we go. What'd you think of last night? How'd that investigation work out for you? Was it just a quickie?
It was. Yeah, that's what she said.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. It was you know, as usual, it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Kathy was great.
Yeah, she's an interesting lady, and way into the investigation aspect now of this stuff. And she's a psychic medium, Kathy Toll, and she came on her very first paranormal investigation with me in March. I brought her to the Merchant's House. She didn't know where she was going. I met her over on West 4th Street over by the basketball courts, and we walked over there together, and she was hitting it out of the park that night, and really tuned into the house in a big way. And she enjoyed doing the investigation part with the meters and the EMF meters and
right.
The EVP session. So she has become a big part of the team now, and we appreciate that. So she'll be there also, and there you go.
Yep.
So then next week we're going to. What are we going to talk about next week? We're going to talk about the big three. That's next week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's next week.
That would be October 15th. We'll talk about the kind of three general terms of hauntings, which would be
the intelligent haunting, the place memory, and the poltergeist.
The ever-controversial poltergeist phenomena.
Ever-controversial.
Yes. You're so not into this, Larry. Are you?
I am. I'm very into it. I am so into it.
All right. Well, you know, I'm going to put Larry on the spot, and most of this evening's show is going to be Larry talking his head off because I haven't boned up on consciousness like I should have.
Talking my voice off.
And so Larry's going to do most of the talking. So, Larry, this consciousness thing. Talk to me about this consciousness thing.
What is consciousness? I think is somewhat better defined, although it's somewhat limited at the same time. It refers to your individual awareness of your environment. It's your own unique thoughts, your memories, your feelings, your sensations, etc. And, you know, these are obviously all shifting. They're all changing. They're all evolving. And therefore, your consciousness is constantly shifting and changing and evolving. So that's what the sort of definition of consciousness is. Would you like to comment on that? Were you even paying attention to anything?
I was paying attention, but I was checking the stream. And consciousness is would somebody's personality be a part of consciousness, or would that be just another word for consciousness? All right,
excellent question.
Thank you.
So now a neuroscientist would tell you that consciousness is the same as your mind, and your personality is the same as your mind, or your personality resides within your mind. That's what a neuroscientist would say, and the reason for that.
But you don't have an organ called the mind, though.
No, but they use the definition that I just said to describe what the mind is all about. So, in other words, you have your brain, obviously. The brain, the activity of the brain, is what forms the basis of the mind. So, in other words, the thoughts, the feelings, the sensations you are experiencing, you're experiencing through your mind, according to neuroscientists. Your consciousness then, you know, is the same as your mind, or comes out of your mind, if you are out of your mind.
Wow. Well, then, well. Okay, so
now, you see, this is why I've got a problem with this.
All right.
And I think you do, too.
Yeah.
Because there's, then, you know, does that mean that, you know, in the way we look at things, does that mean that consciousness is the same as our personalities? And it would seem to me that this definition is too limited to be a definition for one's personality.
Right. Right.
And now, go ahead.
Okay, no, go ahead, go ahead.
No, so I'm going to come back to this right in a moment. So, this is something that I had mentioned before, that that philosophers and scientists and theologians and some guy named Gus down at the bar has been wrestling with for hundreds and hundreds of years, and it's known as the mind-body problem. The absence of a physical, unidentifiable connection between the brain and the mind is the mind-body problem. And which is that, so a neuroscientist will tell you that the mind simply cannot exist without the brain.
Right.
And therefore, when the brain dies, the mind and therefore consciousness cease to exist. And that philosophy is called physicalism or monism.
But if the mind is an energy, then would you call the mind energy? If it's
it's that, you know, again, if you are a neuroscientist, the brain, the mind, okay, the brain is firing off, right, synapses. So
right,
it is giving off that energy.
Right.
It's also filled with fluids. The fluids are also helping to form thoughts.
Uh-huh.
So it's this sort of interaction, the culmination of these interactions, that then forms the sensations, the thoughts, the feelings, etc. It's that culmination of those feelings that would be the mind.
Right, but that energy that the brain is firing off doesn't stop. That energy now is
out. You mean
is
when the brain
out,
is dead? Or
well, even if it's alive, that energy, whatever energy it's firing off, that energy has now transferred into the environment or somewhere else and doesn't stop, correct?
I suppose be, that's right.
First
energy
law of thermodynamics
cannot
says,
be destroyed.
Right.
It could be broken down but not destroyed.
Right, and it transfers, the law of conservation of energy. And
that's right.
And so that energy is out there still.
Yes. Yes,
and is that energy intact as a consciousness? That's the question.
Right.
And if it is can you communicate, and is it aware?
Right.
That.
Well, I mean, it may not even be that. I mean, you know, the question is: Does consciousness have anything to do with what we currently know? In other words, does it have anything to do with what we currently know in neuroscience? And it may or it may not. It may have more to do with what we know or don't know about quantum physics.
Right.
So I think to say, you know, consciousness is the mind. The mind is formed from the brain, and therefore when the brain dies, consciousness dies. Ergo, there is no such thing as ghosts, there is no such thing as spirits, there's no such thing as reincarnation, etc.
Now, if consciousness is a result of the brain activity, right?
Yes, okay. Taking the neuroscientist's approach, right?
What about a baby who hasn't learned anything yet?
Right.
Prenatal,
yes.
Who hasn't learned anything. Does that baby is that baby conscious? Does it have a consciousness?
That's an excellent question. I suppose a neuroscientist would say that the baby is capable of primitive thoughts and therefore has primitive consciousness, and
right.
that consciousness will grow and evolve.
You know, there's a I just lost her name. Jenny Wade. There's a doctor named Jenny Wade, also a famous name from the Civil War, the only civilian to die in the Battle of Gettysburg. Dr. Jenny Wade has done a lot of research into prenatal consciousness. I went to a lecture of hers. And they talk about a baby in utero. The mom was having a test done where they insert a needle into where the baby is, and it came close to the baby, and the baby put its hand up to block itself from the needle. Now, how would it know if it hasn't learned anything?
Right.
How would it know to try and get out of the way
of a needle?
Right.
Well, because I think I can answer that question. There are humans like all animals are born with genetic based instincts.
Right.
You know, there are something, you know, birds know how to do certain things, and it was shown through research that the birds know how to do these not through learned behaviors. My voice is cracking. What do you think about that? Not through learned. Don't spit the beer out, Dan.
I'm not. I got it.
Not just through learned behaviors, although that's part of it, but is actually genetic. It's built into their DNA, and that's true of a lot of behaviors. Certainly self-preservation would be one of those behaviors,
right,
that would be hardwired into
fight
everything.
Or flight. And,
that's right.
Right.
So that's one answer. What is, I think, a more interesting question is, if you have, it's the zombie question, if you have twins, for example, you have two people that came from the same egg.
Right.
Right, they were born at the same time.
Right.
They are raised in the same environment. They go to the same school. They have the same parents. They have many of the same friends. Why don't they have identical outlooks on life? Why don't they have identical, you know, preferences and identical views and everything? Everything should be. I mean, if everything comes from our brain,
mm-hmm.
and these two people basically have the same brain,
have same DNA.
They have the same DNA, which that DNA helped to form their brains, or actually formed their brains.
Right.
In effect, they have the same brain. Why do they think differently? And as anyone will tell you, many times identical twins will be very, very different people.
Right.
So,
but they do share a lot in. It sounds silly to say, but you see it with the Olsen twins when they're on TV, they finish each other's sentences.
Right.
I mean, it's I know twins who,
right,
who they finish each other's sentences and they don't even realize that they're doing it. It's just a normal thing. So, do you think there is some kind of shared consciousness that they're experiencing?
I don't have a lot of twin experience myself, but I've heard stories like that where one twin is experiencing pain or sadness or depression. And thousands of miles away, the other twin just knows it. They feel it themselves.
And do you think they become different as well? I just thought of this because all those stories of twins, they were separated at birth, that come together as adults, and it turns out that they have led very similar lives, and they've,
right,
married women with the same first,
yeah,
name.
That's interesting.
And do you think that maybe twins who are raised together but have different personalities, you think that is a conscious choice that they're they're deciding to be individual, to individualize themselves, would they just opposite of what the others do?
No, but understand, too, you know,
that's
even,
more psychology than...
Right, exactly. But even the twins that, you know, like you said, finish each other's sentences and have this sort of psychic bond, they're still not identical people. They're not, they're not sort of cloned personalities.
Right. They're not duplicates.
Right. And so it then begs the question, why if everything comes from the brain, why should this be different? So let me go do a little bit of a history lesson here.
Yes, please.
So, sorry. So no, not at all. This is all good stuff. So in the 1600s, I can never pronounce his name properly. Descartes was the first scientist to associate the mind with consciousness and with self-awareness, and made a distinction between what is the mind and what is the brain. He felt that the brain was the seat of intelligence, and which was different than being the mind. And this then became the basis of the philosophy of dualism, which is the opposite of monism. And he suggested that basically the brain was just a machine. But the mind was now this is where we get a little, you know, into 1600s science. And obviously wasn't true, but that the mind was this sort of non-material entity that didn't follow the laws of physics, and that may or may not be true. But he felt that the pineal gland,
right,
within the brain was where the soul resided. The soul also being consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it didn't follow the laws of physics, it sort of sat in this sac within the brain. And although he knew, this is again another flaw, although he knew that you know, humans and animals both had these glands, he fully maintained that only the humans had the souls for some reason. I suppose if he said otherwise, the church would be nailing his asked to a board.
Right.
So maybe it was just because of that he was maintaining that. But it was, maybe not, because he actually used this rationalization to do a lot of vivisecting experiments on animals as well. Anyway, so that's the, that was Descartes, or Descartes. I don't know which
is right. I
think it's
Descartes, so
yeah,
it's born
sounds,
French.
Yeah. It sounds sort of like a fashion designer. So now, moving on, what's also interesting is, okay, so there's a term called qualia. I love that word, qualia.
It's a great word.
Can you say that with me, Dan?
Qualia.
That's a nice word.
Qualia.
Qualia. So it's a philosophical term to describe the subjective quality of the conscious experience. There goes my voice again. It's a lot of talking. I need some more beer. That's the problem. Hold on.
Sip, Larry. There's no rush, pal.
No rush
There's
at
no
all.
No rush, but you're on a roll, and it's fascinating.
So, and qualia is fascinating. So, like, an example of qualia is the pain you experience of a headache. What is that? The pain you're experiencing? Because the pain you're experiencing could be very different than the pain I'm experiencing, or the taste of wine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why you hear all these bizarre descriptions of wine. Well, it's got a velvety texture with a touch of horsehair and sassafras. You know, because because who the hell knows what wine actually tastes like?
Right.
You know,
right.
Once you have enough glasses, then it doesn't really matter anyway.
Right.
Or the redness of a strawberry. Just, you know, how red is a strawberry? How would you describe the redness of a strawberry? Well, it's red, isn't it?
Right.
So that all those types of things are referred to as qualia.
Qualia.
Come on, Dan.
I'm just listening, man. I'm fascinated by this.
Listening.
I'm
this
fascinated.
Is the Larry Show tonight.
I know. That's what I said.
Come on, you said you were going to bone up on this stuff.
I did not. No,
obviously not.
Not at all.
So now I've got to. You know what? You're one of those kids that, you know, you're supposed to do your end of the science project, And you get, you know, I get saddled with that kid.
I'm just a sidekick type, man.
I have to do all the research. I have to get all the oak tag and the Elmer's glue all myself.
That's right, or I'm going to beat you up on the playground afterwards.
Exactly. Yeah. So, okay. So
I'm taking care
on.
Of the stream here, pal.
So the point of Qualia is that, you know, there a large part of our experience in the world is purely subjective to a degree that the origins of that subjectivity are questionable. Like, where does it actually come from? I mean, you could say it's sort of a complex psychological, you know, formula of all of our previous experiences and as I said, this sort of instinctual DNA that we're born with. But, you know, again, who the hell knows? So there is another aspect to philosophy, another theory that has to do with consciousness, which, again, I love because I always love a good zombie story, as I know you do, Dan.
Love me a good zombie, boy.
I think you want to rephrase that, Dan. I'm not sure if you actually love a good zombie boy.
No, really. I love zombie boys.
I said about you. Seriously. I heard that you used to hang out in those zombie boy bars.
Zombie bars are the best.
Well, zombie boy bars.
Come on. Continue on.
Okay, right. I'll continue on because one of us must. a philosophical zombie is now. This is sort of a philosophical simulation or construct, which is. It's a hypothetical entity. In other words, it's a hypothetical zombie that acts like a person, but it lacks the experience, the ability to experience qualia, and therefore has no consciousness. And that's really interesting. And that goes back to the idea of twins. You know, if you can't, I mean, if twins experienced the world through their brains only. Then this whole idea of qualia would not come into play, and they would be experiencing the world identically. But because all of our experience is based on the qualia of our lives, this is what leads to our individual consciousness.
All right. You know, I'm just wondering, when a person is under anesthesia or in a coma.
Which I had been just recently, yes? Not in a coma, but under anesthesia.
All right. And their consciousness, they're unconscious,
right,
is what it's called. But yes. Their brain is still working.
Right.
And it's still firing.
Yes.
So if how can they be unconscious then? Like, what's...
Well, because I think... So first of all, you have to, you know, ignore the fact that it's called unconscious.
Right.
You,
it's, you know, that's just for lack of a better word.
That's right. It's definitely lack of a better word. The thing is, your brain has basically been chemically put to sleep, right? It's been sort of chemically switched off. And you're still experiencing the world, but the part of your brain which would remember, which would store those memories, had been switched off purposely. Because you don't want to remember the painful, the
right.
Literally physically painful parts of that experience.
So is there a pain... There's pain happening, it's just not being experienced.
The pain is happening, but it's not being sent to the centers of your brain that would store it and say, aha, by the way, there's a lot of pain right. happening down here.
All right.
I had the same question, and quite frankly, I don't have a good explanation for it myself.
Yeah, I mean, well, like science can't tell you how anesthesia works. They just know that it works,
right? I mean, and so you have two problems. They can't tell you how exactly anesthesia works, and they can't tell you exactly how consciousness works. So they can't tell you anything. But
they can tell you what it's not for some reason.
What do you mean? Oh, that's right. That it has to do with the brain, and it's not something else.
Right. Exactly. And that it can't carry on after the brain passes away.
That's right.
After the body. So that's you know. An odd kind of little conundrum or an odd little thing that happens where science can tell you that that is not possible, but they can't really explain how
right.
consciousness works, but they can tell you how it doesn't work.
Yeah. So, you know, using my own story, which threw me for a loop, A couple of times I had been put under for, like, endoscopies or what have you. And what's interesting is, so I'm on the, whatever, the operating table or whatever you'd call it, and, you know, the doctors, the nurses, the anesthesiologist is there. They're getting ready to do this procedure on me, and they start pumping me with the anesthetic and waiting for it to take effect. In the meantime, the doctor is saying to me, "Okay, Mr. Hewitt, can you please turn over?" And I say, "Sure, I'll turn over." So I turn over on my side, and then the doctor says to me, "Okay, Mr. Hewitt, we're done." And from my perspective, I turned over, and he told me I was done. From everyone else in the room's perspective, about 25, 30 minutes had elapsed when they had done this procedure. That just was not part of my consciousness at all. My, you know, what it is, but I just could not remember. And it's not because it's not part of my consciousness. It's because the part of my brain which would have stored those memories had been shut off. So it really has nothing to do with consciousness. It has to do, again, with that part of my brain.
With more biology than...
Right. So now the question is, though, and this is what I've always asked myself, okay, I believe in consciousness as separate from the body. I believe that my consciousness survives physical death. If, I mean, when I die, when I physically die, and my consciousness is freed from my physical body, will I remember those 20 minutes?
Wow, that's a great question.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's or are those memories still stored in your brain somewhere, and they're just, the files are corrupt? They
Okay, so then the question becomes, all right, what exactly is stored in your brain, and what exactly do you carry with you as consciousness?
Uh-huh.
Because, like, for example, when you are reincarnated, for example, you know, according to, and we talked about this in the first episode, I believe, and we're going to touch on it later, so I'm not going to get deep into this, but, you know, again, the researcher, Dr. Ian Stevenson, the research psychiatrist who did a lot of work on the, I'm sort of multitasking here and not doing it very well. He did research into these kids who remembered past lives, and he was able to verify the stories that these kids were saying, because these kids were saying, well, this is not my real name is this, and I'm married to this woman, and this is her name, and I have these three kids, and these are their names, and I was a shoemaker, and on and on and on. He was able to verify about, you know, a couple of thousand of these stories. The thing that's interesting about this is that in something like 98% of the cases, the kids or the previous personality to the kids, so in other words, who these kids were previously in their previous lives, had died in a very traumatic way. So it's as though the trauma of their death had somehow short-circuited the natural process of forgetting your previous life and moving mm-hmm. on. But by the time these kids were about 6-7 years old, it's as though this amnesia had set in and they could no longer remember anything from their previous lives at all. Again, as though it just that was a process that just was not supposed to be remembered. Yet who they were, you know, the consciousness of that previous personality has obviously transferred into this body. The personality of those previous people has now transferred into these kids.
Their likes and dislikes and...
Exactly. In other words, who they are on a very basic level has transferred over. And even, you know, on some level, the basic memories of, you know, of the name of who they were, the names of their family members, and so on. So it's interesting, you know. So what is stored by the brain? What is stored by the consciousness?
Right. And I mean, that it just what you were saying just made me think of cellular memory with transplant recipients, right, who suddenly will take on not the personalities but the likes and the dislikes, the taste for a particular food or the dislike of a particular food that they before the transplant enjoyed and now afterwards they don't like it anymore. I mean, we're all connected on a, I think on a cellular level. We all come from the same, if you believe in the Big Bang, we all come from the same thing. We're all made up of, we're all just kind of carbon producing little beings. And I believe that we all have a little bit of each other inside of us. And can that kind of cellular memory, influence consciousness and memories and personality. Wow, man, that's heavy stuff.
Boy. Yeah.
It's heavy stuff. But the more I think about it, though, and the more I read, I'm reading a great book right now called The Quantum Enigma, and it's a fantastic book. The more I read, the more it makes perfect sense, and it doesn't seem so far-fetched, and it doesn't seem so out there. It just seems like nature. You know, and it's just something that's going to be happening over and over and over till a lot longer than our consciousness is going to be able to remember.
Yep, exactly.
That's fascinating stuff, man.
It is fascinating stuff.
And where was I reading? I talked about it last night. I read that the consciousness is bombarded by a billion bits of information, more than that, 200 billion bits of information every second. You're receiving all this information, but consciousness, it has to filter stuff out, and the only stuff that reaches consciousness is about probably 2,000 bits of information, and they're all self-serving, meaning where you are at that moment, time and space, and all stuff to kind of get you through the day so you're not falling down and bumping into things.
Right.
So that leaves an awful lot of information that we're filtering out, that our consciousness is filtering out, that we might not... that we're not experiencing on a conscious level. I don't know, subconsciously. I don't know, man. This stuff is just it hurts my brain when I'm thinking about it.
I mean, you know, I won't get into all the details because I quite frankly don't understand them myself. But I would highly recommend our listeners to do a Google search on quantum consciousness. Because I think this is the future. This is where explanations will start to come from, where we'll start to understand what consciousness really is. Mm-hmm. It's going to come from our understanding of the quantum world. Because it, you know, basically in a nutshell, the idea is that our bodies, our brains, are these receptacles for the consciousness, which again, resides in sort of quantum space.
Right.
And so when the body dies, the consciousness returns to the quantum space and...
Waits for a new receptor.
That's right. Can move on to a new receptacle or whatever that may mean. And so, in other words, the universe is kind of, you know, the quantum universe is made up of either many consciousness or... one universal consciousness, which simply expresses itself through these different receptacles,
right,
which are our human bodies.
Right.
And that's cool stuff.
That's very cool. And what's what was it called? The Global Consciousness Experiment?
Right.
We talked about that.
The Princeton Experiment. That's right.
You want to touch on that one more time?
I certainly shall. So the idea here is, it's not just an idea. What the experiment is all about is that there are random number generators all across the world. There are these random number generator stations all over the world that just constantly spitting out random numbers. And what has been happening, I think they've been doing it for how long? 30 years, something like that?
Yep.
There is a definite pattern so that when there is some kind of a global event like 9/11 or the death of Princess Di or the World Cup, outcomes, or, you know, things like that, that the random number generators start generating numbers in a statistically significant manner. So, in other words, rather than having an even spread as you would statistically expect, of these numbers, they start pumping out more or less of one number over another, which you would not expect. What is more interesting, again, is that these this phenomena seems to be tied to these global events because they happen just before these events occur, and they happen all over the world. So, in other words, it's not just in, you know, people in England reacting to Princess Di's death. It's people all over the world somehow anticipating this emotional response just before the incident actually occurs.
Right.
That's what's so cool.
If you go to if you get a book called Entangled Minds by Dean Radin,
yes,
who talks a lot about this, you can also go online and you can look up these events because they're all on computers all over the world. They're all time stamped and you can see how these things graph out. Up to the second, pretty much, right before the first plane hit on 9/11, or right before the announcement of Princess Diana's death.
Right.
It's amazing stuff. It's amazing stuff. And
again, this is Princeton University. This is not.
It's not some silly place that's going to give you a degree in
tea
reading.
It's
Princeton.
Right. Yeah. That's what's so interesting. Yeah, it's very cool. So now, what's with my voice tonight?
You're becoming a man, Larry.
Finally.
Right before my eyes.
I was wondering what some of that downiness was that I had noticed in the past few days.
Downiness.
Yes, downiness. yeah, but seriously, what is with my voice tonight? It's very strange. Usually I have a very sexy, sultry voice. And
you know, I think...
And now I sound like a pimply teenager.
You know, you were up late.
I was up late.
EVP, late into the night.
Yes, that's what we call it now, EVP.
Yeah.
I was doing a lot of EVPs late into the night.
And,
a lot of EVPing into the night.
And, you know, you're having some alcohol.
I am, but I would think the alcohol would help.
Soothe the chords, as it were.
As it were. So now, let me regain my manliness. If that could even be a possibility.
Never.
So now, to bring this full circle, there goes the voice again.
Deal with it, man.
Okay. So to bring this full circle, what does this have to do with Psy and the paranormal? Well, if consciousness is separate from the brain, is separate from our human bodies, then consciousness can survive, for one thing. In other words, the idea of spirits or ghosts is plausible. Reincarnation is plausible. And it would help to explain other types of psi phenomena. So in other words, if consciousness exists, and if it exists as a universal consciousness, as it seems to do with this Princeton experiment, then not only does it not have anything to do with physicality, but it may also have little to do with time.
Right. And it's not dependent on our bodies being alive. It's almost, well, I'm just trying to think of like ESP or a medium. Using consciousness almost like if it's consciousness is a its own separate entity outside of ourselves,
right?
If they can use that like a router, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And kind of tap into that,
yeah, exactly.
To go to somebody else's as like a direct line or a wormhole,
right?
So
like for example, and I'm not sure. I don't know if I've discussed this. It's not my personal theory. I've heard this out there in the world as well, that there is a difference between what you would call a ghost and what you would call a spirit. Mm-hmm. And I've heard psychics describe it as that ghosts are much lower energy than spirits are. And although from a sort of parapsychological or a scientific standpoint, I'm not quite sure what that means. From an instinctual perspective, however, I do understand what that means. But more specifically, a ghost generally is what we, when we're talking about a haunting, we're talking about ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're talking about a haunting, we're talking about usually a place that has some kind of entity or energy attached to it, or it could be a person that might have an energy or an energy attached
right.
to it. Now, so that makes sense. So you know, a psychic can go in and make contact with the ghosts that are there, as they say. They're there.
Right.
And we understand that. What I have a hard time understanding is when a medium, when a psychic medium is able to contact a spirit that is not tied to a location or a person. In other words, like for to give you a real world example, I one time went to the Forever Family, one of the Forever Family events, and there were mediums that were going around the room and doing readings with people, and you couldn't call a medium over and say, "Hey, excuse me, can you come over here and do your medium thing, you know, with me?" It was the sort of thing where a medium would come up to you and say, "Excuse me, Dan, I have someone here that has a message for you. Would you like to receive it?" That's how it worked. And then you would say yes, and they'd say, "Okay, so there is a woman. She's an elderly woman. She's wearing a blue striped dress. She's got a red scarf around her neck, and she's holding an apple pie." And you'd say, "Oh, that's my grandmother. She always wore that dress, and she always had that scarf, and she was always making apple pies." And she would then go on to describe some kind of a message that your grandmother has for you. Now, this event took place in a banquet hall in Long Island. Now, obviously, your aunt or your grandmother, whatever it was, is not haunting that banquet hall.
Right, right.
So somehow the medium is able to tap into something. Mm-hmm. And get in touch with this spirit, the spirit of your grandmother. Or if you look at it from the opposite side, that the spirit, seeing that there is some kind of an opening to you, mm-hmm. is going to the medium and saying, "Excuse me, I want to talk to that guy."
Right.
So what that connection is has something to do with consciousness, I believe. But I don't know what it has to do with consciousness. And I don't know what that process is, how that works. I just know that it's different than a haunting.
A couple of shows, just listening to you talk, a couple of topics I think we should explore later on. One is mediumship. I think that'd be
definitely
a great show.
Yeah.
And also terminology. I mean, if you talk to somebody like Lloyd, most real life parapsychologists, when they talk about ghosts, they're talking about a place memory. So,
right.
And when they're talking about apparitions is when
right.
they're talking about intelligent type of stuff.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's just something that we should kind of put on the back burner and
right,
talk
right.
about later on. But
let's define our terms.
All right. Well, I think I would be most comfortable referring to an intelligent type of haunting, the person that you're encountering or the presence that you're encountering during an intelligent type of haunting as an apparition.
Right.
I always relate when you have something burns into your TV, they call it a ghost image and
ghosting.
And that's what I'm most comfortable with when you talk about a ghost. I immediately think of a place memory or a residual type of haunting.
Okay then.
So let's set that in stone, Larry. What do you say?
In stone it is.
Thank you, sir.
Okay then. So we have 6 minutes to kill.
We've got 6 minutes. And
who is on the line? We have Eleanor from Poughkeepsie.
I saw Anna in the chat room.
Anna in the chat room.
Is there anybody in the chat room? Wants to say
Anna's
hi?
Anna's in the chat room with... Anna's in the chat room.
I'm not getting any...
Where do you see Anna in the chat room?
She was there a little while ago. She definitely popped up.
I see listener 709 saying, "Larry rocks." And
that was
how
me.
Can I disagree? Was that you?
That was me.
Oh, you know, you're very disappointing.
I'm your biggest fan, pal.
I certainly hope not. I certainly hope that's not true.
I bet you I'm probably your biggest fan. I'm like 250 pounds, man.
Certainly. Certainly my... See, there goes my voice.
What's your voice, pal?
My voice, I'm just... I'm losing it entirely now.
You know why? You know why you're losing it?
Why's that?
Because you talked a lot tonight, and
I appreciate it.
You,
I talk a lot all the time.
You do. But you've always got something smart to say. You've always got... You always got a good wit about you, my friend, and I'm happy to be sitting across from you doing this stuff.
Right back at you.
Thank you.
Soul sister.
And high five.
We
just high five. And, well, I guess we can probably get to wrapping it up. If there's anything else that you need to...
No, nobody's asking any questions. I mean, you can ask questions in the chat room, and we will answer them. Because we're just that kind of guys.
Hold on.
What are you going to put out there? You're always putting something out there. That's why I'm always telling you to zip it up.
Any questions? Watching.
But we're talking. You think someone is just looking at the chat room and not listening to the show? What's the point of that?
My mom did that last week. She wasn't able to log on.
Well, what do you mean log on? You have to log on?
No, I mean she wasn't able to get the radio show on her computer. They have an ancient computer.
I see. But she was able to use the forum.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right, then. Well.
Well, mom's not there. Okay. All right, mom, if you're listening.
I think we have
love you, mom.
Okay.
You think you have what?
You know, I forgot to put on Facebook for people to listen. I think that helped last time.
Yeah. Well, we'll do it next time.
All right, then. Now, wait. Are you recording the show, by the way?
I am.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
Excellent.
You can go back and listen to yourself later.
Maybe I will. Okay, then.
Well, we're going to, I guess, then, sign off. It's, again, thank you very much. And, Larry, thanks for doing the bulk of the show tonight.
Not at all.
I was
my
unprepared, and it won't happen again. But
you
handled it beautifully. You're a smart, smart man.
Thank you.
And I appreciate it. I appreciate you, my friend.
Oh, and I appreciate you.
And
perhaps even more. Oops.
Well, next week we'll be talking about the big three, the general types of hauntings that
are
out
there.
And then after that we'll have shows on mediumship. We'll have shows on. I'd like to do a show on the Ouija board.
Yeah, that would be a good show.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Yeah, because what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know. I don't know.
I have a great clip, and we'll play it. I have a great clip of a guy at Parker's Brothers in the factory where they make it's up in New England. And I told him, I said, look, I do lectures on this stuff, and the Ouija board is such a big controversial subject, and I think it's just a piece of, you know, flake board. So I have him recorded. I told him I was recording it, and I had him admit to me that in no way, shape, or form in the process of making a Ouija board do they insert any magic into it. So,
really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we're safe using a Ouija board.
I would tattoo a Ouija board. You heard it here first, folks.
On the SciShow with Dan and Larry from the SciShow Studios.
Indeed.
In the, what is it, the Lower East Side? Or
no, it's the East Village, for crying out
in
loud.
The East Village. Larry's a trendy East Village guy. So we're going to end this. I was talking about my mom before. This is a John Lennon song called Mother. And if his consciousness is out there and he's listening to us, we'd like to say thank you for the good music, John, and we hope you're well. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Larry?
Thank you very much. Have a good night.
You're the best, pal. Thank you.
So are you.
All right.
Bye.
Ooh.